The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power, is the unwieldy title of Amazon's most expensive series ever. It's a prequel to J.R.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings, set thousands of years before Bilbo and Frodo first blistered their hairy hobbit feet trudging across the endless landscapes of Middle-earth. The story takes place in various locales around Tolkien's world, places both familiar and unfamiliar, and introduces us to a new cast of characters with some friendly faces thrown into the mix. I'm Glenn Weldon, and today we're talking about The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power, on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Joining us today is the host of NPR's Weekend Edition, Sunday, Aisha Roscoe. Hey, Aisha, welcome.
Hey, glad to be here.
Glad to have you. Also with us is Vulture TV critic Roxana Haddadi. Welcome back, Roxana.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Oh, I'm glad to have you. Okay, so to start off, you can't talk about this damn show without talking about its price tag. Amazon reportedly spent over $700 million to produce this series. It's mostly based on the appendices of The Lord of the Rings, and the story traces the early-ish history of Tolkien's world. After a great battle in which elves and men defeated an evil, godlike being called Morgoth, his chief lieutenant, Sauron, escaped and has not been heard from in centuries, so the noble men who sided with the elves were given this idyllic island kingdom of Numenor, but the descendants of the men who sided with Morgoth are stuck back in the muck and mire of the Southlands of Middle-earth, watched over by elves who distrust them. Things aren't going great for the elves of Middle-earth either. They are mysteriously losing their vitality, but a recent discovery by the dwarves who dwell under the Misty Mountains in the Great Hall of Khazad-dûm may provide the key to saving them. The series stars Morvid Clark as a young, headstrong Galadriel, an elf driven to find and defeat Sauron, who killed her brother. She soon meets Halbrand, a man with a mysterious past. He's played by Charlie Vickers. Robert Arameo plays Elrond, who at this point in his life is a cunning elven political operative. There's also Ismael Cruz Cordova as Arondir, an elf who watches over the Southlands, and Nazanin Boniadi as Bronwyn, a human healer with whom he falls in love. Over on the island of Numenor, there's a young rebellious sailor named Isildur, who's played by Maxim Baldry. He's destined to play a key role in the history of Middle-earth, but here he's still kind of a snot-nosed punk. And I haven't even gotten around to the Harfoots, a nomadic tribe of proto-hobbits, or the Stranger, a mysterious magical being who crashes to Earth at the center of a meteor. He's played by Daniel Wayman. The series is helmed by first-time showrunners J.D. Payne and Patrick McKay, and it has already been picked up for a second season. We've seen 6 of the 8 episodes of season 1, and we'll be talking about all of them. And we should note that Amazon is among NPR's financial supporters and also distributes certain NPR content. And as you can tell from that bloviating intro, this is a sprawling series that's epic in scope and story and visuals and music and effects. And in the sheer length of its cast list, that's a lot. So, Aisha, what'd you make of it?
Well, you know, when I first saw it, and I think, you know, there is this other big fantasy show who I think we might mention, which is also a prequel, House of the Dragon. When I saw the Ring of Power, I said that Ring of Power says to House of Dragon, you broke. Because it was just like the money. When you talk about the money they put into it, you feel the money. You see the money. It feels like a movie, right? Mm-hmm. And so for me, like, obviously, I love The Hobbit. I watched all the Lord of the Rings movies and all of them. Mm-hmm. And so I'm into it, but really I'm into any fantasy. Anytime you have a big evil guy, you got someone who you wouldn't expect to be the hero, but could be the hero, and someone who's going to rise up to destroy the evil, I'm in. Uh-huh. I do love that it is sprawling. I think the characters are people that you care about. I think, like, the Harfoots, for instance, are definitely very lovable, but they will leave you behind. And I think that's...
Yeah, they will.
They are nomads who they don't stop for nobody. And I respect that about them. Uh-huh. You know, I like Galadriel. Did I say that right? I can't say all the names.
Galadriel.
Galadriel. Oh, I like her. Uh-huh. She is a fighter. Now, I think she needs to train the other elves because, like, in the first episode, I don't understand how she took down the troll and everybody else. I'm like, why was nobody else doing the step and the thing? You know, it's... I think she need to do some more training with everybody else. Uh-huh. But I really like the show. Like, I feel like if you're looking for an escape, I feel like it gives you that, right? Mm-hmm. The Hobbit, The Lord of the Rings, I feel like they are it's like a brighter take on history, right? Like, it's good and evil, but evil is gonna lose. Evil might have some casualties, but the good in men and elves and dwarves will win out. Not in the orcs, but in everybody else. Uh-huh. 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 Win out. And I like that. I think that's a good counterbalance to some of the other dark things that we see all the time, which I also like.
That's interesting, you know, because I wonder if the show would hit me differently if I wasn't automatically comparing it to House of the Dragon, if it was all by itself, because it does. You can't help but compare them. What about you, Roxana? What do you think?
Well, that's such an interesting comparison to make because my partner has never watched an episode of Game of Thrones, does not watch House of the Dragon, has no interest in it, and is all in on the Rings of Power bandwagon with me. I think if you're like a Tolkien high fantasy, that sort of there is good, period, right? Like there is bad. Yes, absolutely there is bad. But there is good. And if you find that good, that can help you build this alternate realm where friendship and camaraderie and companionship, all of those things bring you together and you can be victorious and you can transcend. I mean, I think that's fantasy, right? And like uh-huh. Tolkien set that tone. But so much of what we're seeing is either a continuation of that as you get in Rings of Power or a purposeful subversion and rejection of that, which is what George R.R. Martin did with Game of Thrones and what House of the Dragon is doing now. So I love the comparison because I think if you are watching both, the comparison is inevitable. But I think on its own, Rings of Power is doing something very fascinating and ambitious. Of course, the money helps. This is like what? This is like the GDP of like a small nation.
It is. I think all of New Zealand, like, they get a paycheck from this.
Yeah, everyone is getting, like, a royalty check and, like, bless them for it. Uh-huh. But I also think that you are seeing a very sprawling sort of narrative that is doing a very good job being intentional and deliberate about the fact that in a world, there are going to be all these different communities with their own different rhythms and routines and ways of life. And all of them are important. And that's like a strangely sort of subversive thing for this series to be doing, right? I mean, people who are big mad about the casting on this show have called it propaganda. And I just think that's hilarious because like everything is propaganda, right? And so if your propaganda is in support of diversity and inclusion, then like, how is that bad? So I think that's what I'm really enjoying, that there is this sort of intentional, we're going to build this world and it's going to look as much as possible as the world which you might recognize. And that's going to work for the show. And I think it does.
Yeah, I don't want to give the racists too much attention.
No, that's it. They're big mad and like, whatever.
They're mad and they don't need to be. Also, racism is a major theme of this show. Now, it's mm-hmm. fake racism. It's fantasy racism where the men hate the elves and the elves don't trust the dwarves. Tolkien himself tended to people his world here with dark, swarthy, evil types from the south and fair-skinned, blonde, beautiful elves from the north. And I'm not excusing that. I'm just saying it's part mm-hmm. of this world. I think what this show is doing is it's speaking to the House of the Dragon, the George R.R. Martin of it all, because I think it's trying to introduce nuance that Tolkien in the original work in Lord of the Rings didn't bother with, right? The notion of orcs as this vast, implacable, evil race who cannot be redeemed. That was something that's in the books, but in his letters, in his later life, Tolkien was kind of grappling with. The notion, can Sauron, the evil guy, be redeemed? And the elves of this era are not the peaceful patrician elves of The Lord of the Rings. They are political animals. They are hiding information from each other. They're being imperious. Is that working for you, that difference? Does it feel like it's part of the same world?
It's working for me because I think that it is doing, like, how much do you take what the author wrote in the actual text as canon? Mm-hmm. And then how can you incorporate these other things, like these other thoughts that the creator right. clearly had about their own world? I think the ability to see both aspects of that is making for a really immersive, sort of well-rounded show. And I also think it speaks to the fact that were, what, thousands of years before the events of The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. And I think if we were to be in a world that felt exactly the same, it would, for me, lose impact as a viewer. I need to see a discernible difference. I need to understand what is the past in this world and what is the future. So I like it as a barometer of change. And to use a character like Galadriel, who is thousands of years old and like a presence in all of these ages and times, I think is really smart to help us understand the differences here.
Now, Aisha, you mentioned Galadriel as a character you really liked. You may or may not be aware of the internet griping about the quote-unquote girl-bossing of Galadriel, where she's this awesome badass here, and she wasn't in Lord of the Rings. She was very removed and this avatar of peace and wisdom. This is straight from the text. Galadriel of the First Age is proud, she's ambitious, she's rebellious. And later on, we get the fact that her need for vengeance is a thing she's got to get rid of, because we see in The Lord of the Rings, when Frodo offers her the ring, she is tempted. So the seeds of it are here, and we need to see where they come from. So how are you feeling this Second Age Galadriel?
I mean, I think that what you have to do with something like this is you take the world that was created, and then you're respectful to the world, but you have to first entertain, and you have to first say something.
Like, an arc, yeah.
Don't be so wedded to the text that you're unwilling to make a more modern take on it. Like, we are in 2022. This book was written a long time ago. There are going to be differences. I think it's okay to have Galadriel be more of a fighter and more of a warrior than you would have had for J.R.R. Tolkien. That wasn't his time. That wasn't his life. J.R.R. Tolkien had a vision, but everybody's vision cannot be as expansive as the world itself. So I find Galadriel to be a very compelling character, like not even knowing all her history the way you do. And obviously she's driven by something that makes her want to destroy this evil, right? Who took her brother, her loved one.
He was here. Sauron was here. Tell the others to rest while they can. At sunrise, we move on. Let's take the search farther north.
Further north?
This mark was left as a trail for orcs to follow. The last time I saw it was on my brother.
That's a primal need, right? Like, that's something that anyone can relate to. And I think that having that and having her, you can call it girl boss or whatever, but I think that it allows you to be able to connect with her and to understand, like, why she's moving the way she does, like at this point. And I should also say that I always thought that the story of the rise of Sauron to me always seemed like it was dying to be told.
Sure.
Because, I mean, in The Lord of the Rings, he's an ass. Like, he's not even totally a is. Whole totally thing. Is. You see, like, in the video games and little prequels, you'll see little of this huge guy and they cut the finger off. Like, it's an amazing story. I'm like, this is a story that I want to see. So, I mean, I'm shocked that it's taken so long to tell this story.
Well, speaking of taking so long to tell the story, we've been talking about the adaptation. Let's talk about this show itself as it functions as a show. I really like the show. Then episode 6 hit. And I love this show. And that was tough for me because Amazon gave critics the first 6 episodes to screen, but then said to us, you can only write about the first 2. And I had scheduling conflicts. I couldn't do it. But if I did, I don't know what I would have said, because what I would have said is that this series is slow walking this story in a major way. We got long episodes where the time was increasing, but the tension wasn't. And that wasn't enticing. It was just frustrating. It's called inessential mystery. We are still faffing around with the identity of the stranger. We're throwing out all kinds of hints as to who, what's going on with Halbrand. And if this show gets the 5 seasons at once, we might look back on this and go, oh, that was great table setting. How do you feel about the pacing?
I mean, I love table setting. Table setting means that you're going to eat something. So, like, what's the problem? Mm-hmm. I only got the first 2 when I received screeners. So it was really interesting to sit with the first 2 and see how much the series was taking time to build that light versus dark dichotomy, which you were talking about. And then, of course, to sort of take the deviation into Numenor, to spend time with the Harfoots, to spend time with the humans, to spend time with the elves. I have really enjoyed it because I think that it is giving a distinct sense of place for each one. So I am really liking it, but I do know that there is sort of this sense of, well, when is something going to happen? I have heard that sort of complaint. But I think if we're sort of looking at this less as an episodic TV show and maybe more as a 8-hour movie, I think 6 would feel like, oh, okay, here is where this story is going to go. Here is the turning point. Here is how we see all of the mistakes Galadriel has made up until this point
sure.
pay off in 6 in a really, really great way.
I don't personally mind it. I could see some people saying, okay, where's the action? But I feel like that's a part of them telling a very large story. That's what I feel like. I'm traveling all over the globe. I'm finding out about Middle Earth and this person over there. And it is giving me a better understanding, as I said, as someone who is not an expert on this stuff. I do think that some of the strongest, like, action type, just, like, movement is the stuff with the humans and, you know, the elf who is overlooking them. What's his name? What's that guy's name?
Arondir.
Arondir, yes. And he's very handsome and he's in love.
Yeah, he is.
And he's fighting all the orcs and he's just, you know, when he got captured, and I feel like that's some of the media stuff.
Sure.
Not as far as the story, but just as far as action.
I guess where my frustration is coming from is that we know what has to happen, right? And this is not a spoiler. This is the prologue to The Lord of the Rings. This is what the entire Lord of the Rings is based on. What has to happen is Sauron has to seduce the elves into creating the Rings of Power. Like, and this is why I'm completely on board with this show's take on the elves, because he's got to get them to do it, to exploit their fear, their desires, so that he can use the One Ring to bind their will. We can see how these guys would be easily exploited. He can pit them against the dwarves. He can pit them against each other. You know, so after all this blows up, they will learn from it. And by the time of the Lord of Rings, they're going to be hanging back on, like, we're out of here. This is not our fight. We're not going to get involved. I don't think the show is doing as deft a job when it comes to the Men of Numenor, because that plot line, that conflict is basically, the elves are stealing our jobs, which, it's, come on.
My husband is very upset about Numenor. He's very upset about Numenor. He doesn't get it.
Yeah, I'm down with the elves. I'm not down with the men.
There is the purposeful awfulness of the men, right? Like,
yeah.
Sildor, absolute trash. Like, please, like, kick this man into the ocean.
But his name is so important. When I heard the name, I said, it's Sildor. That guy is important.
Yeah, like, we know what Isildur does. Like, Isildur is, again, should be kicked into the ocean. And I think that there is a little bit of underdevelopment with those characters who have a very specific end point. And I think that's probably the weakest part of the show for me. Is somebody like Isildur, I'm aware that he is going to make a devastating choice. I don't need to watch him be a brat for yep. potentially 50 hours of television.
I thought Isildur did something good. He do something bad. I'm intentionally not looking it up because I want to be surprised.
Okay, don't look it up.
Yeah, there's some big bad stuff coming the way of all of these characters over the next year or so. We'll see.
When are they going to make the rings? Do we know?
I mean, we know they're going to make them, whether they make them at the end of the second season or maybe in the fifth. I mean, I don't know. It's like, by the pace we're going, I'm going to say sometime in 2028, we'll see our first ring.
It's impossible to say. Who can tell?
Yep. We want to know what you think about The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Roxana Haddadi, Aisha Roscoe, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great talk. And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. This episode was produced by Hafsa Fatima and edited by Jessica Reedy and Mike Katziff. And Hello Come In provides our theme music. I'm Glenn Weldon, and we'll see you all tomorrow.